This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Dr. Arthur Kaplan, who is a PhD, a professor of ethics and health policy at the NYU Grossman School of Medicine, the director of medical ethics at NYU Langone Health, and he has also consulted MLB on this issue, as well as advising the U.S. Conference of Mayors on how to start up rec sports across the nation. And Dr. Kaplan joins us now. Dr. Kaplan, in reading the story, it doesn't seem that you're that overly optimistic about baseball being able to be played, at least to its conclusion, or maybe at all. So tell me about that.
Yeah, sorry, Michael, but I don't think we're going to get through this, even this abbreviated oddball season. The main reason is there's still a lot of travel involved for these teams, even if they're playing regionally. If teams are going from Philly up to Toronto, they're going to be on airplanes. There's still bus travel. And what you have is a ton of exposure to security people, baggage handlers, the drivers themselves, checking in, staying in different places. This is not the NBA bubble idea. And I think that widespread traveling around for teams is just guaranteeing that they're going to get infections.
But they do fly charter, right? So
yep. That
helps.
They still got to have, they still got the baggage handlers. Security is still out there. I'm not as worried about what's going on the plane as I am in between the plane and wherever they're going to sleep. That's where your biggest trouble is going to be.
So it's interesting, though. I mean, all the doctors I've spoken to, they don't have a big concern about any of the athletes getting seriously ill from this because they're high-class acts. Yeah, but it's obviously you can't have 10 or 20 guys going on the IL and expect to complete that game.
Right. So that's one reason I'm pessimistic. Here's another reason. You know, some of the players do have underlying conditions, juvenile diabetes, a couple of the coaches – more senior people likely to have hypertension, things that put them at risk. So I wouldn't be so sure that we're just talking about young guys getting infected and going on. You know, you get one hospitalization of a coach or a trainer, I don't know. I think that's going to shut them down. I don't think that's going to continue. The other reason I'm nervous, and, you know, I don't want to be a complete Debbie Downer here because I want sports back, but a lot of these players live with folks who are older or who might have their own health conditions. I know a couple of MLB people I've talked to live with a spouse who's got a, you know, disorder, an immune disorder. They're terrified that they would bring it home, not so much harming them, but harming a loved one. And then, you know, you could see even people like Mike Trout, right? He's already sort of said, I got a pregnant wife. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm even going to do this. Those are really complicating factors. I can almost turn around on you guys. Do you think this season could get past one hospitalization?
A hospitalization would be tough. Obviously, something worse than that, God forbid, I think it'd be tough to get out from under. But here's my follow-up question then. This is going to be a problem until there's a vaccine. There might not be a vaccine for years. I mean, optimistic people say maybe by the end of the year, the beginning of next year. So does that mean there's not going to be sports until there's a vaccine?
Well, I think it's worse. My dog is agreeing here. I think it's worse for football, right? I mean, what's the chances there that you're going to have people traveling around for weeks? Some places are talking about bringing the fans in at some percentage, you know. There's no way that they're not going to get infections there traveling around, even charter and even with special arrangements. They're hardly isolated. So I think that one's in deep, deep trouble. I don't expect to see that. And they're not going to see, I would say, college football because you can't ask student-athletes, unpaid people, to take those risks. Before I get to the other sports, let me just ask you this. So what group of 20 to 25-year-olds has ever been diligent about controlling risk behavior in their free time?
Right.
I've always said that. So if you're going to travel and you're not going to have quarantine – athletes have always gone out at night and they've had fun and things like that. So that's going to endanger people too.
Yep, and you know, they got fans, they got groupies, they got, you know, risky behavior just hanging out with their buds. you can see it now in young people just at Lake of the Ozarks or in Atlantic City, or you pick a club or the, you know, drinking in the street in New York outside the bar. I'm just thinking, you know, if you're going to bring sports back, you've got to have much more control. So I think the NBA model, maybe, you know, if they really are watching everybody and kind of keep an eye on them for week after week and know where they are and kind of know who's in and out. The rest of them, NHL, football, baseball, I don't see it. I just don't see it.
Well, the NHL's in a hub too, so they'll be in the same situation that that the NBA's in. But how
right,
many?
But I mean, if they figure out how many, you know, as far as I knew, they were still arguing about which cities and how many, and that. So you know, they're a little.
Yeah, it'll probably come down to two cities, but at least there won't be the travel and all that. But just help me out here, because I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. When you talk about the spread, and you just made great points about how, you know, it can run through a room. This is a virus that is highly contagious. But yet when the incident back on March 11th, when the two members of the Utah Jazz tested positive, yeah, and they shut down, it ended up being just those two. And that was before social distancing. That was before anybody was taking this virus seriously. It only got two Jazz. It only got four Nets. Like, it didn't seem to run through the room.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think?
Yeah, it is highly infective. We do know that. But also, you know, it really depends, if you will, anybody have a cold that day, anybody got the flu that day, who's sneezing, who's coughing. They could have been in pretty good shape, and even though they had contact and even though they had breathing, they weren't distributing the thing the way you would if you came down with just a cold on top of COVID, or you were, you know, we see demonstrations with protesters and cops together. They're yelling at each other. Clearly, fans, when they're cheering in the stands, like we saw in Italy, remember that first mm-hmm. outbreak? They were getting particles from yelling and screaming all over the place. So it could have just been luck that we didn't have people coughing, sneezing, wheezing, spitting. But when you start to add that behavior in, or exchanging glasses or bodily fluids or whatever, risk just goes up, up, up.
Talking with Arthur Kaplan, the professor of ethics and health policy at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, also the director of medical ethics at NYU Langone Health. So in the story that I read yesterday, it said that you consulted with MLB on this issue. So when you told them this stuff, what'd they say?
Well, that's slightly a lie. Not MLB. I talked with some of the players.
Okay.
So I haven't had a chance to talk to the players' union or the owners, but I have had a chance to talk with some of the players. They knew I was working with the mayor's group and so on. And by the way, I'm just talking my own opinions here. I don't mean to speak for the mayors or anything like that. But
right.
I'll tell you three things that players said to me. One was, I'm really afraid to bring this home. I mentioned that already, but they are worrying about that a lot. Players said to me, this is such a weird season with these ginned up rules and the short season. I don't even know why it would be worth the risk. Couple of them said, I know my buddies, they're going to be sneaking around, fans are going to be coming up to them, they like the adulation, I'm not sure I can trust them. So I heard those kinds of concerns. Certainly there are players that are also thinking, it's just not worth it. I'm not, you know, get me a vaccine and I'll be there, but for this kind of, let's call it abrogated, oddball season, I'm not sure it's worth my time.
All right, so
and those
before,
are the richer ones.
Before we let you go, maybe we end on a positive note. I don't know what your answer is going to be. You're in the medical community. You're right there. Are you optimistic? Are you bullish on a vaccine being available to the public in a short amount of time?
Sorry. Not a chance. No way. President talks about in the fall. I even heard Tony Fauci say maybe by Christmas. You look at the amount of testing it's going to take to really run this thing through and then manufacture, say, 300 million doses and ship them around the country. I think we're already pushing the vaccine into next summer and beyond. And that presumes we get lucky and we get a hit on a vaccine, right?
Right.
There's no guarantee we'll get one. But even if we do, I'm going to tell you it's going to take many, many months to test it, to convince us all that it's safe. And then many, many months to make it and distribute it. So,
I mean, it's
like,
weird, though.
This is the worst call anybody had to listen to. It's like constant depression here. But no, I don't see it.
It's strange, Dr. Kaplan, because Dr. Fauci was on with us 2 days ago, and he said that he's optimistic by the end of the year and at least by next March that it would be made available to All-Americans. So, I mean, this guy's saying yes, and you're saying that you don't think so.
Well, let's put it this way. The fastest vaccine developed from, you know, mice to people in history has been 5 years. Now, we didn't have, admittedly, 135 different companies chasing the vaccine at the same time. That's unheard of, working on the same thing. So that should add some speed. But I'm going to say it again. If you don't come up with something that the public trusts and really say the evidence is solid that it's safe, you're going to have a lot of people saying, I'm not taking it.
So can we get to a point before a vaccine where we can live with this virus, where people aren't being hospitalized and dying? Is there a drug that can stop that from happening?
Yeah, I think that's as likely to be found as we get a vaccine. A lot of people working on that. I think we might want to spend a little bit more research money on the drug therapy idea rather than just pushing everything over all of our, if you will, numbers being played on the vaccine side. I don't think that's the smartest way to go. Again, I'm a little bit at odds with the NIH guys and Tony Fauci and others, but, you know, I think it's better to put your chips down on a lot of numbers here.
Dr. Kaplan, we thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.